Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of Silly Point with me, Gautam. Today on the show, we'll discuss Sri Lankan cricket from the glitteringly original cricketers that the Emerald Isle produces that we all love, to also issues surrounding the many interim committees that serve more time than full-time administrations and more. To discuss all these, who better than Hilal Suhaib, the owner of the very popular Sri Lankan cricket website Island Cricket, is here with us. Hilal, thanks a lot for joining us on the show. Let's start with association with Island Cricket. I know it's a very popular cricket portal with a lot of South Indians, at least, who tend to follow a lot of Sri Lankan cricket. Who we see it at least as the Crick Info of Sri Lankan cricket, kind of a thing. How did the idea come about for you, and when did you think of starting something like this?
First, thanks for the kind words. It's where in my mind we're nowhere close to Crick Info or not up there as yet. We have a long term goal to fill in a certain void. I mean, I'm sure as an Indian cricket fan, you've seen there's plenty of Indian cricket sites out there. There's also Crick Info that caters to the vast Indian market. In Sri Lanka's case, we don't have. Or we didn't have such a thing before. So even as a fan, I was deprived of content that I was constantly seeking. So I thought, what better way to do it than start my own thing? And in 2006, I started looking into researching to see if there was anything in place right now. But I couldn't, at the time, there was nothing. Apart from Crick Info and a few forums, and I didn't want Island Cricket to be another forum, so I looked at it in a fan's perspective and thought, what would I like to see? I'd like to see content like photographs of players off the field. I'd like to see videos of old games. I'd like to read articles written by good journalists. So I decided to combine that. All these avenues into a one website, and that's basically how it all started.
Wonderful. Not only is it just good journalist writing, but it also is largely a user-generated group, right? That's what you call yourselves on a Facebook page. And we see a lot of bloggers who submit content, and how important is it, that the fan actually gets a forum wherein he can, express his opinion or his view as much as, say, a journalist can. I think it is also one of the differentiators that I see on Island Cricket.
Yeah, exactly. The site is entirely, or I would say 90% user-generated media. I mean, it's users who submit content, the photos they take with players. They see a player outside somewhere, they take a photo, and it's that kind of content that's hard to find. I mean, you wouldn't see Crick Info catering to so much other than licensed content. And in licensed content, you'd find photographers at the ground or at a press conference, or you might see an occasional picture of a photo in of a player in a hotel. But with the fans, you get to see so much that you don't see of the players otherwise. So it had to be a fan-driven effort. In fact, myself, being a fan, if I was submitting content or writing articles and there was an interest for my opinion, I knew that there were others like me out there as well who wanted a platform, to express their views and share their photos. Share their memories with the players, their encounters. So yeah, it's. I mean, without user-generated content, the site would be nothing. Without without our member base and our fans, it would be nothing. So what I meant with having as a fan, I like reading articles on Sri Lankan cricket and Sri Lankan cricketers by good journalists. So at the same time, while giving a platform for the fans, I also try to secure or network with journalists who are willing to share their articles on Island Cricket. So we're giving the fans not only the space to interact with other fans, share their content. We're not giving fans content that they can't find elsewhere, but we're also giving them the articles that professional journalists write. So it's one place that you can find everything. And we try to include every aspect of a fan's requirements, basically. So if you spent a good part of your day going to various sites and reading articles, our news section is entirely user submitted, where fans find an article, interesting article, and like they would post it and share it on Facebook, they share it in our news section. So other fans have a constantly updated news section submitted by fans, and who better to find the good articles than those guys, than those people looking for those articles. So it is a fan driven effort, but we try to cater mostly to every requirement of a fan. So in other words, if it entertains me, I've been a Sri Lanka cricket fan for years, I'm sure it'll entertain others as well. So that's a kind of concept that I've stuck to.
Yeah, and Hilal, one thing that you know that also intrigues me here is, I understand it's all you know, the user found and the user generated content, but how about things that are rumors? Do you go ahead and give your source details as to who they are, or how do you get around to that? Maybe to quote an example, I just read on Island Cricket that, you know, for example, that is going around that Ajanta Mendes faked his injury, and I see that first appeared in a Sri Lankan newspaper. Is it something that you are conscious of? Do you want to know who the sources are before you allow people to put it on the side, or do you monitor it? Now, how do you handle a situation like that?
Yeah, entirely. We don't rely on rumor, because nor do we report rumors. What that article you're speaking about is referring to an article on the Island newspaper. What we do is we report what's already out there. Like, we report that the Island is making this claim, but if there isn't a source who's willing to give his name, or if, like you say, if it's a rumor, there is no space for it in news. So the article you're referring to talks about the Island newspaper's cricket correspondent who says that he spoke to someone in the cricket hierarchy, an unnamed source, who has made the claim that Ajanta Mendes may be faking his injury. So what we've done is, in that article that you referred to on our site, on Island Cricket, not the Island newspaper, that article actually mentions the allegations on that paper, and in the bottom, it actually has a response from Ajanta Mendes' agent and manager, Roshan Abhisinghe. So what we've done there is not only given that rumor or the allegation space, we've given Ajanta Mendes' manager an opportunity to respond to that. So it is something that, it is something entirely unbiased. I mean, we don't give rumor space on our site, but we focus on credible, if there's, this is a newspaper that's a prominent newspaper in Sri Lanka. So if they make the claim that Ajanta Mendes was faking his injury, or if they say somebody in the cricket hierarchy in Sri Lanka has made that claim, I mean, fans should know about that, and Ajanta's manager should have the opportunity to respond to that, which the Island newspaper didn't provide him with, and we did.
And Hilal, one other thing that is, you know, catching up with cricket, like in mostly the Western world, and you would probably know a lot of that now living in North America, is that a lot of humor that is coming into cricket, say for example page two of cricket, or faking news, which is a very popular faking newspaper kind of a website, or Jared Kimber, who writes cricket with balls kind of a thing, Alternative Cricket Almanac. It is all on all imaginary stuff. There's a lot of humor there. There's a lot of made up stuff. Is there a conscious attempt to also, explore that angle that you see in the future for island cricket? Because, it isn't very it isn't something that sits on really well with as people from this part of the world. You don't make fun of your favorite stars. You don't make fun of your favorite cricketers. It simply isn't there. But there is huge scope for tapping into some sort of web space or writing there.
Yeah, I agree. There is a huge demand for that. Otherwise, I don't think such a big entity like Cricket Info would give it space. I mean, satire, satirical content. Like, I'm sure that there is an audience for that. And I mean, anyone with a sense of humor would find it hilarious. You can't get offended by such when you know it's not meant to offend. It's just there as mere entertainment. And with our blog section on Island Cricket, we provide people with that opportunity. I mean, if you want to write something funny, I mean, you have the space for that. We haven't looked into we don't look into sourcing writers or looking for content that's entirely like Cricket Info's page too. It's not something that I have pondered on, but I've always thought that someone will come along, a fan will come along who is funny enough to do it, and I wouldn't object to it.
Wonderful. I think it's like the Sri Lankan way, the more original you are, we don't want to tamper it kind of thing. Good to know that that's also carrying over to the web space. Nice. Let's probably discuss a little bit on Sri Lankan cricket. For us Indians, we are always marveled at how on earth that team in the space of maybe 10 years or 15 years can produce as diverse and world-class people and also as unorthodox as people like Jayasurya, Muralidharan, Mendes, Malinga. I mean, how does that happen at all? I mean, there are more people that play cricket here in India than probably the rest of the world together. If you just took a catalogue of the registered cricketers that are there in India, that'll run into millions. How is it that a small island country like Sri Lanka is able to not only have the eye to pick such wonderfully gifted natural talent, but also ensure that they don't change the natural ways, but they nurture them so that they can also succeed at the top level? Is there an explanation to that?
I honestly, I don't know. I mean, I can only look back at something like what Sangha referred to. Sangakkara said that it was a coaching structure that was basically unhindered. I mean, they wouldn't mess with someone's technique too much. And that's the only explanation that I can think of as well. I mean, I haven't, I don't, I can't offer anything that's different to Sangha's perspective on it. And I think that's probably what it is. It's the rural setting that people go. I mean, Jayasurya once in an interview was saying that he fiddles with his pads often because he wore pads as a junior cricketer that didn't have straps, or the straps were breaking and was tied with handkerchiefs and pieces of cloth. So he would always have to fix his pads. So, and beach cricket apparently is the foundation for all these cricketers. I mean, Jayasurya grew up in a coastal town in Sri Lanka and played cricket on the beach. Malinga did that too. So maybe softball cricket and other influences, trying to be different, because we only gained test status in 1982, and for a long time we were the minnows in cricket, and we used to we would get bashed. So when you're on the receiving end, you strive to be different, and then you also, maybe the administrators encourage people who had something different to offer. So, like Sangha says, I don't think the coaches mess with people's techniques too much. If you can hit the ball cleanly and you time the ball well, I think your technique comes after those two requirements. So, as a batsman. So I can't say for certain what it is, but I would go with what Sangakkara has said, that it's a coaching structure that allows originality to blossom. And in other parts of the world, you wouldn't see that so much. You'd see people focusing on technique, and telling, if I mean, we've heard commentators on TV say this over. If Malinga was in England, he wouldn't have perhaps got past junior level cricket there, because the coaches would have tried to correct his action and correct his action. And Malinga won't be Malinga without his slingy action. I mean, he's not going to get that reverse swing. He won't have that extra pace. So things like that. I mean, they allow cricketers to blossom on their own. And also in the case of Malinga, I mean, he played school cricket though, but most of his cricket in his younger days was on the beach. So there was no like professional cricket structure for him to be like, to mess with his mind. And growing up in Colombo is a little different, because you're exposed to coaching manuals, and you're exposed to coaches who know a little more than coaches in rural settings. So I guess the rural setting also has adds to that, where more unusual cricketers come through the cracks and end up at a club or
Moving on, not only there is a counter argument to say that you are allowing natural talent to flower through, but wouldn't it also be prudent at some point to nurture it, to fine tune it, not change the basics? I mean, I know somebody like Stuart Law said in England that he's not somebody who's teaching people at club level to go and teach them technique. There are people who have come a certain level. I mean, even if it means, the skirting of the international cricket, whatever that means in your country, it could be the provincial cricket or state cricket or corporate cricket. People at that level, it doesn't make sense to be changing their technique. But it also makes sense that people are able to fine tune it. Maybe you see somebody like a Mendes coming through who can, flick the ball through with just two fingers and bowl just about anything that a right-arm spinner can do. Would a person not take him under his wing and teach him the basics, like maybe endurance, the finer aspects of bowling, like maybe somebody like a Muralidharan to teach him what it means to build up pressure, how do you set up batsmen? How do you use your variation that you have? I know that you're naturally gifted, but how do you do that? I mean, is there a process in place wherein you identify some people? Like I do remember Sangakkara mentioning a few things in his Cowdery lecture, where he even went to the extreme of pointing out two examples where somebody even wanted to try a volleyball spiker to bowl a little bit of cricket when it is unique action and that kind of a thing. But when you do identify and say that, no, this is my Lasith Malinga, and maybe Lasith Malinga himself didn't know he was so round arm when he sees for himself for the first time on TV kind of a thing. But you've taken that guy under your ward, under your wing. He's there ready to take that up. Is there a structure in place that'll fine-tune it from there?
I can't speak for what the foreign coaches do. I don't know what their mentality is, because they come to Sri Lanka assuming that these cricketers that they're going to be coaching are professional cricketers at the top level, similar to cricketers in Australia and England. But I feel that even at the highest level, Sri Lankan cricketers should learn things that they may have not learned at the club level. Just as you pointed out, Mendes, I mean, his major stumbling block is what to do when those variations don't work. I mean, as a good spinner, there are different ways that you can conjure up a dismissal, like you say. I mean, he doesn't have that endurance factor where Murali could go overs and overs and overs without conceding too much runs, but keeping that pressure on, even if the batsman could pick him. And somebody on the other end would take the wickets. And that's what cricket is about. It's a team sport. So Mendes didn't have that learning curve at the first class level, because he didn't play that much first class cricket. I mean, he was thrown into international cricket because he did well at the domestic level. for a brief period, and then you expect him to learn the tricks of the trade at international level. And then once batsmen get over his variations, he doesn't have that next, you know, the skill needed to be able to still motor on. But whereas Murali had all the variations, that he also knew the tricks of the trade. Later on in his career, he got better as he was getting older, and maybe he didn't spin it as much, but you know, the guile and the art of spin bowling is something that, you know, you learn over through experience. And like you said, there should be someone even at the highest level in Sri Lanka that can keep coaching and grooming these cricketers. I wrote about a conversation Tony Gregg was having on TV, and I don't remember word for word, so I'm not going to quote him, but what he said was he spoke to a Sri Lankan batsman, and he couldn't, the batsman at that time, this was in the 90s, was unable to explain what a googly was. So he said, you know, how can you pick it if you don't know what it is? And you know, it's absolutely crucial that even at the highest level, people who haven't been exposed to good coaches and who come up with these orthodox actions are taught the basics of the game. And when foreign coaches come to Sri Lanka, they expect professional cricketers, you know. And they're all professional cricketers, yes. But what I mean is that they are not the same type of cricketer you'd find in Australia who is a professional through and through. I mean, you can speak about technique, they would know what you're talking about. I mean, you can ask any Australian first-class cricketer what a googly is, and they would probably know it. I'm sure Sri Lankan cricketers do know it, but this is just Tony Gregg was talking about one example which I'm bringing up. But yeah, I think that it's important that coaches continue to work on cricketers, especially in Sri Lanka.
I mean, I read this wonderful book, Chinaman, by Shehan Karmatilaka. But how is it that, you know, I can't find a book, say, on Arvind De Silva or Dulip Mendes or Siddharth Vettimuni? I walk into a store, I'll try to find it on net. I simply can't find any literature on Sri Lankan cricket. Is it something that you find probably in printed content in Sinhalese or Tamil? How is it that there is nothing that is available when I probably check the net or try to find it in the store? I mean, I can go and pick a book on somebody as rare a cricketer as, you know, John Iverson or Jack Iverson, who is a ancient version of Dilip, of Ajanta Mendes. Is there a reason, Hilal, that you don't find literature on or biographies or autobiographies of cricketers coming through? I know it's a lot of blog and web generated content these days, but how come there's not much cricket literature that we can find?
Well, Aravind De Silva actually released his biography, I think, shortly after he retired, so that exists. But it's something down to the individual, I guess. Maybe if it's a biography, it's down to the individual entirely whether he wants to get into writing a book, or whether he wants his, you know, life story published. But Murali's biography is coming out shortly. I don't know the date of the release, but that's coming up. Arjuna Ranatunga's biography would make a good read. Don't know why he hasn't looked into that again. And it's only those individuals who can speak for that. I can't say why there isn't enough books written on the players, but apart from biographies, that there have been books, but I see what you're saying too. There's just not enough content, and there's just not enough books on Sri Lankan cricketers and their achievements. I mean, I don't know how many books exist on Sri Lanka's 1996 World Cup win, which alone is a quite a big achievement, you know, for a small island nation to come and win the World Cup when they were not even favorites to win it. So I don't know. I can only say that maybe no one's taken the initiative. Maybe maybe there are books. I mean, I know there are several books on Sri Lankan cricket written by local authors, like Michael Roberts recently put out a book filled with very rare photos and, you know, articles on Murali and a collection of essays basically on Sri Lankan cricket. So there is I mean, if you go to a Sri Lankan publisher like Vijitayapa's website, you'd find books on Sri Lankan cricket, but maybe it's not marketed to a global audience. That's perhaps why you haven't seen it, Gautam.
I think it is probably maybe not a subcontinental thing at all. Maybe, I mean, even on somebody like Sachin Tendulkar, I think there are hardly about four or five books. I mean, biographies, and generally people who want to write about it. I mean, if you look at somebody like Shane Warne, there'll be unauthorized biographies and so on and so forth. And an English captain will have, you know, a journal release at the end of every year. At the end of an important series, he'll probably release a book. So I think it's a culture that's actually catching up with, you know, some of our ex-cricketers now starting to write books, and people wanting to publish their collection of columns and so on. And then maybe it is something, I think it is extremely crucial for the next generation of people not only to look through the videos, but important, I would say, that the players themselves come out and write their autobiography, so that, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where we all know about the chucking controversy when, you know, Ranatunga took out the entire team at the MCG. You will see Ricky Ponting talking about it in his autobiography when it releases. You will have Steve Waugh has spoken about it in his book and in his autobiography. Matthew Hayden has spoken about it. Adam Gilchrist has spoken about it. So 20 years down the line, I think it is important that, you know, you also have not just a columnist or a journalist who has spoken about it to a player in an interview, but I think a person's honest individual opinion, maybe we'll get there someday.